So after 24 years in political office, what is one key takeaway that you have between of about balancing political office as well as personal integrity? And what advice would you give the next generation of leaders?
You can balance it. I think integrity is the core of your being. I'm not being moralistic. I mean, you know, we all have sinned and fallen short, and all of us have flaws. But do you say what you mean, and do you mean what you say? And when you've given an undertaking and a promise, do you keep it? Do you speak intentionally to obfuscate with a forked tongue, or do you want to speak plainly? I hope that the standard of politics will continue, that we've integrity is core, and if you, whatever political party, if integrity is not core to our political process, I think we're on very slippery ground. And I think the recent elections, among all the positive aspects, obviously the PAP is, you know, very happy, and I'm sure Prime Minister Lawrence Wong and the Cabinet is very happy with the results and thankful. But to me, from someone who is going out of politics, it was particularly gratifying because the vote, the results, were an affirmation of rational and progressive politics. Just think of if you didn't have that positive outcome, and obviously a vested interest as a PAP member, but that aside, let's say that the ruling party and even the opposition says we are not out to be the government, and the PAP will still be the government. So, but let's assume that as all of us assume that the PAP will still be the ruling party, they still be the government, but it got in the low 50s. That would have been a vote that was ambiguous. Because you have a ruling government that basically has done, and we're not perfect, fairly well with crisis, whether it was a global financial crisis, whether it was COVID-19, that has stood up for issues of integrity, that has dealt with it the best it is possible. And some could say you could have done more. All right, no arguments there, right? Let's take that as a given. You could always do something more and we'll learn. But if you had not done as well, what are future generations of people aspiring to political office, what would be their takeaway? This is not rational or not progressive. In the times like this, for Singaporeans to say, okay, I believe what you say, we're entering a difficult period, let's be rational, we trust you with this. And that's a solid vote for, hopefully for Singapore, whatever the outcomes, whether it's in 20, 30, 40 years. I mean, when Mr. Lee was asked to think of the long-term future of Singapore, he didn't give a definitive answer. And there is no definitive answer. The definitive answer depends on each generation. So I think the government, as much the people as much as the government, has the responsibility to decide what kind of politics they want. And someone can say, well, you're saying that because you're in a ruling party. I don't think so. You want rational politics where good policies are supported and but bad policies are not supported, whatever political color you are, that there is enlightenment to say, well, that's a great idea, but if everybody is asking for more and you're giving it, who are you going to tax to pay for it? Uncomfortable questions, reality questions, or for some to say, well, that's a good idea, but this is the downside. And more with educated Singaporeans, that discourse must come up. So I think SG Forward is a good initiative. And Singaporeans, let's face it, right? We're very different. The percentage of university-educated Singaporeans has gone up by leaps and bounds compared to the 1960s. But just as we are educated, I think we also need to be more progressive and enlightened. And I hope that, you know, we can continue that. It's remarkable how much we've progressed, right? And sometimes I speak, and these are the facts, from per capita of 600 US in 1960s at independence to now even higher than Japan, highest in Asia, right? Six figures. And there's a price to be paid for the rapid rise. And that price is to believe that it can always continue and that it was preordained or a given fact. And if you look at the way that developed countries have become, more have fallen than risen, right? Take any countries. We don't want to be impolite, but look at the world map and just compare a developed country, say, 20 or 30 years ago and it's standing today. Of its social cohesion, of its infrastructure, of its ability to deal with health problems, transport, fiscal strength. I mean, just basic objective parameters. And then ask how many countries have been able to maintain high standards. And of that, when they were in high standing, whether they were able to progress or become worse. And the truth is that it's hard to stay on top or stay good. And what is the curse? The curse of successful countries, I think, is the belief that the set of conditions that you've inherited will be forever so. I mean, that's very natural, right? Chinese has a saying, 富不过三代. Right? The first generation strives for it, started from poverty, understood, lived through poverty, and to them, anything is on the way up. The second generation got transmitted some values, also saw for themselves the ascent. The third generation was born into comfort and wealth and couldn't maintain it. I mean, it's completely natural. It's what these proverbs come out from. So how does Singapore guard against that? I think it's the question that we have to ask. How do we guard against that? And there are no easy answers. How do we keep at this level of progress? There will always be unequal distribution, and we'll have to narrow that for sure. But first of all, it's the standard of wealth. You don't want to be the country that's poor and dealing with unequal distribution. That makes it much harder, or even in the middle, right? The middle income trap. You want to be a progressive country. And I think that must be the question that occupies all of us. How do we continue to, and what are the fundamentals that will get us there?